Welcome to the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast, a polyvagal theory-informed therapy. I'm your host, Joanne McIntyre. Here we talk everything polyvagal and SSP related. Dr. Porges has provided us with a revolutionary framework for understanding the connection between our autonomic nervous system and behavior. The SSP acoustic intervention is an exciting new therapy helping people all around the world.
Welcome to episode 31, the Safe and Sound Protocol as a vagal resonance field tuner for healing with Paula Scatoloni. Today, you're all in for an interesting conversation about the SSP and SSP group work. We talk about resonance and coherence in the body and between humans for a tuned present moment connection. A little bit of background about Paula. She has been on a journey to understand the connection between consciousness and embodiment through Western and non-Western perspectives. Paula has a master's in social work and has brought cutting-edge perspectives to institutions such as Duke University and co-developed clinical and training programs such as the Embodied Recovery Institute. As a sound body and energy-orientated practitioner, Paula loves to blend movement, sound, and vibration with neuroscience and body-based therapies to offer a holistic approach to support individual and collective nervous system healing. Yeah, welcome, Paula. I'm so glad that you've come to join me again and be on the podcast. And I wanted to invite you back because for my listeners, Paula Scatoloni was, I guess, previously when we did the group discussion about integrating somatic experiencing with the SSP. And Paula was one of the co-authors on a set of guidelines that was developed with a group of other amazing practitioners. And those guidelines are really helpful to practitioners to learn a little bit more about somatic experiencing, but also for somatic experiencing practitioners of now working and embedding the safe and sound in. And there was a few things that Paula said in our discussion that just kind of just grabbed my ear, and I've been wanting to get Paula back on for a while so we can unpack that for me and then for everyone else listening as well. And Paula knows what that is when I sent her the email saying, I'd love you to come back in and just talk a little bit about some of the things you said about the, you know, relational resonance field and. So I know that we're going to get there. But before we do, talk a little bit about your journey over as a practitioner and how that has evolved and developed to the work that you're doing now.
Sure. Well, thank you again for having me. I love to talk about this and share the journey. So this is a pleasure. I have been a somatic experiencing practitioner since 2017. So working primarily with the body and taking advanced trainings in somatic experiencing, including touch work and other types of working with trauma or developmental wounds that are preverbal. So we work with the body because we don't have memory from 0 to 3 usually. And so we're working with the body. So that was sort of the doorway into starting to, I think, be able to really study consciousness and where consciousness resides. And especially those very early imprints, right? Implicit imprints from childhood. And so I was doing that work for many years and utilizing the SSP with it. I started using the SSP in 2017 as it was designed at that time, which was to use for an hour, and had used it on myself many times and clients. But my curiosity started to peak when I combined it with touch work and begin to notice the effects of working with the 0 to 3 material through touch and then combining that with the sound.
So I'm just going to jump in a little bit there. And because I know listeners are going to like, what does she mean by touch work? Is that like Yeah, unpack that, because everyone's going to have a different
Okay.
vision in their mind about what is touch work.
Yes. And so touch work in the field of trauma and somatic work, the way I'm trained by Kathy Kane and Steve Terrell, involves it does involve utilizing the hands, but most of it is about your presence and coming in with embodied presence to begin to invite any aspects of the body, of the self that have had to be recruited into defense because there wasn't enough presence there in the early years. So it's really working with the structures of those of the social engagement system in the age of 0 to 3, where it was being developed through touch. What do we do with babies? We touch them, we swaddle them, we rock them, right? And so we were in that material, right, through utilizing presence and touch. And touch has a way of when you bring attuned presence to the body in that way, the body knows how to self-correct. It knows, like, oh, something good and resonant is here. And now I can start to release something maybe that I'm holding, or I can allow shifts that need to happen to start happening. I can allow consciousness to start to come in that may have been kept out of my awareness around relationship, around touch, around you know, how I feel when I'm in presence with others, right? So all that narrative that we have about relational safety, right, is it gets really you can highlight it a lot with touch work. And somatic therapists are also trained to track the body at a very nuanced level, like similar to body workers. We can track the bones, then we can track the muscles, then we can track the fascia, and we can sense into and understand many, many layers of experience. Now, Steve and Kathy's work, we tracked attachment styles. So I became an expert in understanding how attachment styles show up through touch, through conversation, through gestures, through the way you're interacting with me. And so all that becomes part of the material when someone is working with a somatically trained trauma therapist trained in touch. So it's a very specific niche.
It sounds it definitely, because obviously my mind be thinking obviously from those early years of touch of being very comforting, you know, mums will be very much, you know, whole-handed, you know, sort of touching their infant and, you know, that sort of, yeah, that comforting touch. But is that the kind of touch that's coming through, or is it more like some, or just like, you know, a gesture on somebody's knee or on their back, or in terms of that real sort of swaddling of, like, you know, a mum touching their child's face? Like, you know, with all that affection and connection that goes with that.
Yes, I think the providers are trained to be there and show up in that way. So if someone, you know, turned toward us, we're going to meet them and know how to meet their attachment system. But generally, we're trained to touch specific points. We work directly with the HPA axis, which is your kidney, adrenal, brainstem, and feet. So there's like a protocol that we work with to support what Steve Terrell and Kathy King call foundational regulation. And this is where the SSP comes in, because so I'm was doing this and having very good results with it and utilizing the SSP as well. And also integrating an embodied recovery, which is a model that I co-developed with Rachel Lewis, which looks at gestures, reach, grasp, pull, these very early movement patterns that we must master in our first year of life that speak to our ability to know what our needs are, be able to reach for them, ingest. So I had a couple things I was layering on top of each other at the time, but when COVID began, I couldn't touch anymore. And so I was left with the SSP and telehealth. So that is when things became very interesting, because I thought, well, let's just keep going And let's do this. And let's bring in warm rice packs and put those on the kidneys instead of my hands. And let's swaddle you and put you in a blanket, and let's get some pillows, and let's set up things somatically so your physical body is lighting up and getting those receptors lit up in the same ways as my hand was there. And now let's put on the SSP. And let's see what happens if we pair these. And I found I was getting the same results. And they were, in some ways more profound, because from across the video, from my own style of how I track information, I was able to actually track more information across the computer than I was in person.
That's so interesting.
Because of the subtle, yeah. And that's when we talk about the resonant field and this field that's between us, right? And Thomas Hubble, who is a healing arts practitioner, you know, he talks about it as the inner subjective space, right? And Dan Siegel, right? And his attachment work, it's like the space between us, right? And that is there, even if we're online, if we know how to sit in embodied presence and tune into that. And so then that added another layer of, oh, but what's happening here now? And much of the time with providers, my work is helping them to come into more embodiment, into this place that's, I would say, you know, for no better word, into their heart. Similar to is if you were sitting next to an infant in a crib, right? Or if you're a touch therapist, you would go into that space and ground into the ground before you touch someone, right? So that you're in a place of resonance, in a place of congruence. Another way to think about it is when we have done our work to show up in a way that's neutral and loving and embodied, because our trauma's been healed, right? We become master regulators and can actually use our resonance, our presence, to influence another.
So that's kind of talk about that. Is it quantum physics and that kind of science, really emerging science?
Yes, it could fall under that, but we could also look at people like the Dalai Lama and people who have presence, right? Who use their presence of neutrality, of unconditional love, of just not many thoughts, fairly right brain embodied, and to allow another. So if we're sitting across, to allow yourself to be seen, and then that reflect back to you, right, is a gift that not many of us get.
Yes, and it's developing those skills. And actually, I've got something just swinging around in my mind that I just wanted for us to go back to a little bit about when you're talking about moving to telehealth and then still creating those environmental experiences for your clients. And I guess what just jumped out to me that, and I think that people don't realize sometimes it's those simple little things of swaddling yourself with a blanket and sensing into that compression and doing kind things for ourselves, kind, caring things for ourselves, that I don't think people realize the power of what those little things actually do. Is that your thoughts too?
Yes, I would say at different levels, at a somatic level, compression and what's called proprioceptive input regulates us. That's why we do it to babies. We help contain them by swaddling them. And we're just adults with the same nervous system as the baby, right? And so we respond to weighted blankets and hugs and, you know, pulling something around us. And so at that level, I think, and then there's the level, the psychological level. What are we saying to ourselves? I work from a, I would say, a parts perspective, where we have a witness and we kind of interact with aspects of ourselves. And so when we apply self-care, it's another way of saying that I'm worthy, right? It's a worth gesture, right? About, you know, you're worth enough to stop to do something kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes a long way. If we can be aware of that's what we're doing, right, and really take that in and ingest it
mm-hmm.
in the moment.
Mm. So that brings the word I think we want to move to, where I digressed just before about that awareness and building that. How do you build that in? Because I guess we're speaking a little bit here about practitioners. Is that where you wanted to go to with this?
Well, originally this was for practitioners, but now I've just today launched a course for non-practitioners.
Okay.
So I think we're moving in a direction now where we want to learn how to generalize and teach
mm-hmm.
everyone, right? How to develop the capacity to witness our triggers, our younger states, right, that might be having reactions
mm-hmm.
That are based on not present moment,
right?
Right? And most of us do that most of the time, right? There's not a lot, unless we're really focused on present moment consciousness, you know, we just react from one thing to the other
mm-hmm.
a lot, right? Yeah. So learning to cultivate the practice of witnessing and being able to notice we're having a reaction and what is that reaction? And is that coming from a wound? Is that an ouch, I would call it, like, oh, that just kind of pushed on something. Or is that really a present moment interaction that I'm having?
Mm-hmm.
And because what we'll do is we'll project our narrative onto the present moment and be very invested in it,
mm-hmm.
right? But our narrative might be influenced by the past.
True, true. So I guess my mind's thinking now about, because I was looking at your website just before we come on again, and I love some of the verbiage that you've got on there. But basically you're sort of saying that, you know, by using sound, movement, and vibration together. So let's talk about this program that you've just launched now that's targeting, just it's not just targeting practitioners. So where are you starting? Because obviously people are going to be in a journey of building that awareness of, is a reaction from this from the past, or is this a reaction to another relational aspect from you know, where do you start to help build the different layers of awareness?
Yes. Well, generally someone coming to my program would have some capacity
mm-hmm.
to track their nervous system without being frightened, because your nervous system does shift states with the SSP.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be closing your eyes, and it's a little psychedelic, honestly, where you may see memories pop up and not be worried, just engage and be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And so how I support the process is by listening to 15 minutes and then stopping
mm-hmm.
and processing what's happening,
mm-hmm.
right? And in that role, I am calm, I am regulated, there's nothing that worries me or makes me concerned. And that's a pivotal piece for a provider, right? It's like the parent, when the child is like, do I need to be afraid of this, right? And the parent's like, no, you don't need to be afraid of that, right? That's a memory, right?
Yeah.
Or
and I'm so, so glad. I'm so glad you've said that, Paula, because I know in my role for the support that I do across Australia and New Zealand for SSP practitioners, for a lot of people who are concerned about, I don't like using those words of adverse responses, whatever it is, it's how we carry it, it's how we present it, and that we say there might be some shifts in the nervous system, but if we're neutral and curious and accepting and thinking this is actually a gift, that now we're seeing a shift, that the nervous system's trying to reshuffle itself and find a new way of being in the world, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. I frame it as There's enough safety and resonance, relational holding, that the material can now come up to be seen, felt, and heard. So then if we meet it and say, oh, you're here, tell me. And most of the time, all we need to do is say, I see you and I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Once we've been seen and heard, the material integrates. Then that's half of the reason why the material is being held out of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if we can teach people to tolerate that, and it does involve feeling emotions,
mm-hmm.
right? But most of us are emotion phobic,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like we don't want to feel mm-hmm. difficult emotion. So how do we, this is where somatic skills might come in, right? If we're feeling an emotion, what choices do you have? You can rock, you can breathe, you can bilaterally pat, you can sit and feel my presence with you while you feel it, right? That's what needed to happen the first time around, right? That didn't get to happen. And that's what we have a chance to do this time,
mm-hmm.
now that the safety is there.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a reframe on how to use the SSP, because I do think sometimes it's marketed as a that you're always going to feel good. And that's not always what happens, right? You do at the end, but to get there, sometimes
mm-hmm.
we have to be with some material.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the process.
That is the process. Yes.
Yes. And will you do that? Because I know you run groups. So will you do that in a group setting? So how many people will you have in a group then?
There will be 10 people
in
a group and two facilitators, myself and another trained group therapist who's SSP trained,
mm-hmm.
But also trained in holding space and using the model that I use. Mm-hmm. And then we listen for 15 minutes and then we break out into five,
mm-hmm.
so that when we're processing, we're in a small cohort of five.
Mm-hmm.
So that keeps the relational container really nice and tight.
Mm-hmm.
But then the listening aspect, I'm still holding the whole space for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's an aspect of group. I've been a group facilitator for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
of healing in group and of sharing a human experience and of having someone else say, I was really touched by what you said, or I feel the same, right? That makes it incredibly powerful, affirming, validating, and a sense of community and support that is nice one-on-one. But I think for myself, I'm being called to get out there and work in groups and get this more accessible,
mm-hmm.
right, to people.
Yeah.
So lowering the cost through the group work and helping people to connect in community.
Yeah. I think there's, when you think about, even if you want to pull in polyvagal and evolutionary biology, you know, saying that we're tribal beings, that we really thrive living in a tribe and, you know, a cohesive community. So I could see, like, group work would just, it does give that support and connection.
Yes. 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 If you know how to hold the space and read the energy and manage, I do have an application process too, to make sure people have, you know, their own provider outside if they need it, or somatic tools if they need it. So I ask a lot of questions.
Yes.
Because otherwise we might want to start them individually.
Yes.
Or make sure they have some foundational, you know, understanding before we throw them into that. Right.
Yeah.
So it's,
and that would be where my question was going next, in terms of a baseline of where participants may be at before, because as we know, there's some people who 5 minutes is their window in to see some change. Yeah.
Yes. And so the amount of work they've done up to that point will influence how much they can listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And also just their fragility of their nervous system. Right. So someone with an autoimmune condition,
mm-hmm.
you know, might not be listening to 15 minutes at a time. They might be listening to 5 minutes, right. Or a little bit less,
mm-hmm.
but I do keep those individuals in the group and they just move over to Connect Classical. which was created to regulate children, right? So that tends to be a way to contain and keep them engaged in the group, but they don't have to have as much of the medication, perhaps.
Yes, right. So you are giving some individualization to the listening program during it. Okay.
If needed. Yeah. We check in with each person every 15 minutes to see what's happening. So you're getting the feedback right there and you can make adjustments.
So it's a 60, 90 minute session of people coming together.
It's a 2 hour group because it does involve a landing, because the group container is probably the most important piece, right? That safety. So the landing, the checking in, how are you doing? How is your week? People share about their lives, right? Because their lives change during the process, right? Then we do 15 minutes of listening. Then we process 15 minutes of listening, process 15 minutes. So we only do 45 total. And the last 15 minutes they do, my stipulation is either nature or a pet. Because those are the only two guaranteed benevolent things that I can assure that there is unconditional love happening. So they may do a little bit of listening on their own, but it's a very short.
And that's once a week people will meet.
It's once a week. It does have a companion guide I created with it, so they can feel my presence and support, and going through, I would say it's a fairly deep dive into your relational system, right? And how you evolved as a being, right? And what influenced your capacity to know what you need, or to be able to speak about your needs, or how you take in support, how do you receive? So I'm asking some tough questions in the class. So it's definitely a dive, you know, into yourself. But there's also some teachings about compassion, about self-love, about play and spontaneity. I do think those things, as I've studied the SSP through more Eastern medicine, understanding how when we come into this place of harmony within our different energy systems, our capacity for creativity increases, our capacity for intuition increases, our capacity for dreaming increases. And so for that, I speak to it from a more of an Eastern Taoism perspective of what's happening rather than the neuroscience of that. I talk about that energetically.
Gotcha. And that companion guide, so that is actually like a mini course that, so it's not just like I'm emailing you an ebook. It's actually a guided course that people, and that is alive, or is that like an all?
It's online. So you go in and you'd have there's seven modules. So you would do module one and two before the group starts, and that's all about the SSP, the science, who Stephen Porges is, and just acclimating. And then I talk about sound vibration, frequency, cymatics, different language that is more affiliated with sound healing. Because I do think I use it more in that way. That's my training, is understanding vibration and frequency. And so they get a little bit of, I guess, a new paradigm, right? A new way of thinking about.
And I wonder if that's what you could talk about a bit more, because I think that's what I picked up from when we had that, we talked at that last podcast, talking about, those vibrational fields, and that you felt the SSP impacted those internal vibrational fields of resonance. So, just talk a little bit about your thinking or the theories, or where you've pulled that science and Easternness from to sort of,
So we can think about it a couple different ways, some metaphors that I use. So one, would be, you know, more from Dan Siegel, who's speaking about it, but he's speaking through this lens, which is when our emotions, thoughts, and behaviors are not congruent, then we are in what's called dissonance. There's dissonance that would make me, you know, smile when I'm sad, right? Mm-hmm. So there's incongruence there, right? There's mm-hmm. two. And so through his lens, you know, he's working to bring more congruence by having people feel their emotions and feel more comfortable feeling their emotions within their window. And that is going to bring more harmony into the system, right? And more capacity to feel more emotions. The more we learn to feel and tolerate emotions, the more emotions we can feel, right? Mm-hmm. So he is talking about that through his lens. But then we can move over to sound healing. Mm-hmm. And Eileen McCusick is where I've trained with tuning forks. And mm-hmm. so then these, I think about these metaphors. So I play around with this. This is my antidotal, is that the SSP turns the vagus nerve into a tuning fork. Mm-hmm. And it innervates, right, all through the energy systems of the whole body. And when we add vibration to the body, anything that's not in coherence with the frequency that's coming in, and we can think of the SSP as a frequency, right, that's coherent, gets invited back into coherence. But to come into coherence, we need to go through dismantling and disorganization to come into organization. And that's what cymatics is. Mm-hmm. So we have disorganization and then organization using vibration to influence that.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that the provider is like a tuning fork. Mm-hmm. And so whatever resonance the provider is vibrating in terms of, we could pull in the HeartMath Institute mm-hmm. and heart, the idea of heart resonance, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the provider is resonant, is neutral, present, emanates unconditional love and acceptance, then that, once the vibration starts, there's something that starts to happen between the provider and the client. And this is why we see variations in results based mm-hmm. on the provider, I think, because their seat of consciousness matters.
Mm-hmm.
So with resonance, then again, we could say, well, let me back up. In the way I use it, I do set an intention too. I set an intention for anything that is not in coherence and resonance to be invited back into that. And my approach is through Taoism, which is our understanding of the three major energy points, one in the forehead, one in the heart, and one in the lower gut, which is our vagus complex. And so I set an intention for those to come into alignment. And so I track that. That's what I'm sort of tracking during the SSP process. And there's multiple things happening at multiple mm-hmm. levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
But our lower dantian is where our emotions are held.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the inner child wounds, for better or for worse. And our heart is the seat of our ability for compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and self-love and grief, right? And then the third eye is our ability to be intuitive, to be creative, to have lucid dreaming, to all those I would say higher executive functioning type of ways of knowing, right? And so as a sound healer, that's a third element that I'm holding mm-hmm. on top of the actual nervous system retuning that's happening as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, for me, it's hard for me to say like what portion, you know, was the SSP and what portion was this and where, and I just think, well, healing is happening. People are are coming out of it and feeling different and feeling more like themselves, more attuned to who they are, more able to speak from that place of authenticity and more spontaneous. I mean, it's fairly inspiring at the end. And not everyone has profound. Some people have profound and some have yummy and wonderful, you know, so there's variations. And so I have to sort of have people understand that it's not a comparison. There's going to be some fairly big things happening, and then there's going to be very nuanced and wonderful things as well. Sometimes people come out of it having met all their defenses. So the change that occurs is, wow, I didn't know I had that many defenses. Right. And I didn't know I had that much dissociation. And so, but even that is a step, right, on the journey.
Exactly.
So they may do it again in a little while, and they'll have a totally different experience.
Another layer of fraud, yeah. And just to add to what you said about, because of the whole integrated approach that you have, and I'm not sure if it's the SSP or what, I don't think it matters. And I think it's important that, you know, we're complex beings to have an integrated approach. I think that the SSP creates such a shift, a possibility that where whatever space or framework that we bring to the table just allows that to have more traction or create more sort of change and stuff. And
yes.
Yes.
Yes. So I think having some understanding, most of what I teach providers, I want to invite them to go through the SSP so they can come out of their left brain a little, come into more right brain consciousness, and then get out of the way during the listening. Because if you're sitting there thinking, well, why is this happening? And it's going to interfere with the process, right? But if you can be in flow and acceptance and presence and trust what's happening between, that's when magic happens.
I have to share with you, Paula, that I actually held, it was a modified SSP program. It was like 15 minutes a day. And we did, but it was held in this beautiful big stable. We had, there was 15 people in the group, and there was like horses that were in the sides that would sort of pop their heads out from time to time, or we had a few that stayed the whole time. But the smells, and these, you know, these were equestrian sort of some mental health practitioners, and so that was their safe space, being in that kind of environment. And it was just so, we didn't unpack a lot of other and people were learning about polyvagal in that environment. But what people noticed with that, even with that 15 minutes of just sitting with seeing what they, what the SSP can shift in their nervous system, was just so, it was a real profound experience for me. And I think the environment and how you set it up really does speak to a lot of the magic that can happen.
Yes, yes. Because we're, I mean, that's what the neuroception is, right? It's our, what we're sensing on the outside. So if that is, I keep using benevolent because that's the word I think Deb Dana uses, and I haven't come up with a better one, but you know, if that can be there in the present moment, that benevolence, and then we as providers also offer that, it's only going to take the nervous system one direction, right? It's like we're just shepherding it along on its journey, and it makes it less bumpy, I think, along the way, right? So, and that's why the somatic tools, the provider's present, the presence, the external environment, it facilitates. There's so much support there that it's almost, it's like there's no like, oh, okay, I'll go over here. I'll go over here towards regulation. Yeah.
Very cool.
That's lovely.
It sounds it. So maybe just give me a little bit of an idea of what, a little, unpack a little bit more of a session and how you would bringing in some of like the somatic work or the parts work. So let's say you've done 15 minutes of listening, you've broken up into the two groups of five. So just, unpack a little bit so people will share, and then how else you would hold sort of space and bring in those other work.
Yes. So as you're sharing, say that you're a participant and you share a little about yourself in the sharing, like, I felt like I felt like this urge to stretch during it. And I, maybe gave myself permission or not, but I noticed it. Or I felt like I was a little lost in space. Okay. The lens I'm listening through at that point is embodied recovery and my understanding of different stages and milestones that we have to go through. And so someone who is a little spacey, I start to think about their boundaries and their capacity to know where their edges are. Like, where do I begin? Where do I end? Because I do think this can induce a womb-like experience too. So I start to go way back. And someone, if they're talking about wanting to stretch, for me, that's also part of that very early development of wanting to push into. Again, if we think about like being in the womb and like yielding into the womb and then wanting and how we push with our hands and feet, right? And that whole process in the womb helped us to find ourselves, right? How do I know where I am? So then in my brain, with that background, which a lot of my co-teachers have as well, we're going to say, well, let's put a pillow above your head and at the bottom of your feet while you're listening, so that you can find where you begin and where you end. And so we just put the pillows there, but they don't have to do anything because the pillows are going to do what they're going to do. And this is why I love somatics, right? Because it's just going to come in and support. And I may offer them, this is the parts work, I may offer them a phrase like, there's plenty of time and there's plenty of space. Because that is what babies need. They need time and space, right? To feel, to find themselves, right? It's like, oh, there's my hand. That's my other hand. They need time. And trauma and also, other frenetic things that could be around might get in the way of that, right? So they never had a chance to actually find themselves from the inside. So I might pair the phrase with the pillows and then send them back to listen again. So that's how things get layered. And each time they report, we're listening to the experience. I would say at least half the people do have experience that could be correlated similar to holotropic breath work, where you're going to go back into the womb, or you're going to go back into that birth experience. More so the womb-likeness, the womb-likeness. Yeah.
So with that mindset then, if you had somebody share that I felt like I was sliding off my chair, that I was just kind of like I lost my awareness of, and they didn't have a history of disassociation, but I just felt like I was sliding onto the floor, that I actually had to tell my hands to hold the chair just to sort of say that I'm still sitting in the chair.
Yeah. So that might be, there's not enough there-ness from something on the outside. So we're going to have them lie on the hard floor or sit up against a wall so they can really feel presence. And there's no denying there's something there. And have their brain, I might give them a little exercise during the listening of just keep going back and noticing the presence behind you. So I am kind of working it, trying to create some links in their neurology, they're getting some things fired in the brain around knowing that their support around being able to push in and feel that support, to push away something that they don't like. So if they came and shared and said, there was something I just didn't, I felt trapped, then I might say, like, why don't you do some pushing, some yoga, and we'll do some pushing during the week. So it just depends. So the narrative guides the somatic tools.
I like that.
Depending on what they share.
Very cool. So now let's switch over a little bit to working with practitioners. And I think even them to have that experience, it would sound like just such an enlightening experience for themselves. But to develop that awareness, then how I guide others. Do you shift it a little bit there?
So practitioners, the ones who usually come, have some somatic background, or maybe they've been trained in embodied recovery a little bit, so they have some understanding, or they have some parts work. I'm getting a lot of practitioners who are trained in IFS. So there's a natural, I think, intuitive awareness for them of what to do, how to support. When they feel it in their own body, and this is why I want them to go through it, then it helps them to really get it and understand, oh, okay, that's why I would do that, right? And so they have an understanding. What I'll usually, if they haven't gone through the embodied recovery training with Rachel, I'll send them, if they really want to understand this, I might send them there for a deeper dive, or to Kate Appleton, who has more of a training. For me, the focus of this is for them to have their own experience. And I want to hear about their attachment system, not their clients. I want to hear about their struggle to embody, right? Mm-hmm. Because by helping them, I'm helping their client.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they can get the details of like what to do with these other providers that do that. But they're doing their work with me so they can become more present and available as a co-regulator for their client.
Perfect.
So yeah, so it's a little bit of a different, I call it experiential training for your own personal growth.
Yeah. No, I think very important work, very important work. I'm just trying to think. Well, we've been jumping around a little bit with everything, and I was trying to think, what about any, we talked about a session, and I was going to say what other resources. So I've actually spoken with Rachel. Rachel's been on the podcast before, and that was a wonderful conversation. I think we focused a little bit on the eating disorders, and I believe you were part of that work back earlier.
Yeah, it's I came in with the somatic experiencing background. We were both working at the same eating disorder treatment center. Mm-hmm. I was teaching dance and she was a sensory motor psychotherapist. And so we both came in, she came in with sensory motor, I came in with somatic experiencing, mm-hmm. and then her background is body mind centering. And so this, it was mostly her brainchild that I helped facilitate to a certain point, and mm-hmm. then said, okay, here, you take this, I'm going to go do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're still pretty connected and we pass people back and forth. And, but I think she would be lovely to have back. She's a fabulous teacher and can really help people take these steps to make the somatic not so foreign and not so, it's like, well, why would you do that? Why would you, you know, put a pillow behind their head or put a weighted blanket on them? And so she has a wonderful way of helping people to understand the mechanics of somatics.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And any other good resources you'd like to share?
I think if therapists haven't trained, if they're trained in touch work, if they haven't done Kathy Kane or Steve Terrell's training, or Dave Berger, there's a few trainings in touch. because it does help to drop into that more nuanced place and really check in with your own seat of consciousness and where you're seated from. But any practice that cultivates that, right? A meditation, yoga, embodied practices, right? That we're trained to be in our head and to think about our clients from there, but that's actually quite a disembodied way to engage. We're not trained to, because we've taken the relationship out of therapy or out of, you know, being a practitioner, right? And we've all gone up here and got our book knowledge, and but it's almost like they're not giving us permission to just be human, right? And so we want to bring that back.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's where that touch work, that word touch, has a little bit of taboo about it, isn't there? About the boundaries of touch. So obviously the importance of the intention.
Yes.
Everything behind it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, but practices that allow providers to drop into their own bodies, right, and to be able to track that simultaneously while they're sitting across from their client, because all that is happening, whether they're paying attention to it or not.
So in your description, you talk about, so there's sound, movement, and vibration. So just talk a little bit about the movement component. So how do you incorporate movement?
Well, the movements are twofold. One aspect of it are those gestures. So the gesture of yield. So SSP, from a mind body, from a body mind centering perspective, cultivates our capacity to yield. And yielding is about our sense of belonging. And so what happens during the SSP is we see all the barriers to yielding, all the defenses. And so we work with those by working with the other developmental movements, which are push, which I talked about, being able to push into relationship, reaching, capacity to reach directly for what we need, and grasp and pull, and which is about intimacy, our ability to bring in relationship. So I talk about these dynamics and teach those in the course. And then during the listening, like I might ask you to pick up something and grasp it during the listening. And again, have two things happening simultaneously. We have the sound, we have what I'm facilitating with the resonance, and then we have this corrective experience happening with the grasp, because you're getting fed something in that moment that's going to be very informative. It's either going to come in and your system's like not going to know what to do with that, right? You might have a flaccid hand, you might dissociate, you might... Or it's going to resource, and there'll be a sense of, oh, finally, right? So movement is used that way. I'm working with the gestures, and because I'm trained in dance and movement, using something that I trained in years and years ago and decided to pull it back in. We move through the fluid systems of the body. I've pulled that into the course as well, because those can be correlated with, for example, yield for me is associated with the cerebral spinal fluid and this idea of expansiveness and being able to be in the unknown. And so I do some Qigong in the class, and I guide them through being with movement through the cerebral spinal fluid and feeling the qualities of those fluids. And so they play with yield in different ways. You want to play with it. Do you want to do some self-reflection on it? Do you want to do some movement and think about yield? So they have choices. They don't have to engage in all of it. It's really up to the person how much they want to use, because it's a self-paced course. So there's no requirement. They don't have to finish one thing before they move to the other.
Well, it sounds like a lovely compliment to people going through doing the actual like supported SSP process with you. And that SSP, so for listeners listening in, that SSP process with you, is that like a 4 or 5 week? Is that a 5 week?
It's you have 5 weeks of sound healing, I call it. And then it has an orientation group at the beginning and a closure session at the end. So it's seven altogether.
Lovely. So if people want to reach out to find out more about you and your work, and where's the best way, or how's the best way that people can do that?
Probably through my website, paulascatoloni.com. And they can read about me and my background and contact me. I have a pretty easy access. And then I will respond back if they're interested in a group, if they have questions. They can see the other providers, because there might be someone who they also want, because we're co-leading, if they feel an affiliation or affinity with one of the other providers as well. They can look at their bio. And so the website, I think, is probably the best.
Yeah. And I've been to your website, and I think it's lovely. And I think you've got a beautiful description of how you're kind of integrating those different modalities with the SSP. And I think it's a beautiful mix. And I'm loving the work you're doing. So, and how often do you run your groups then? Is it like every 7 weeks, or do you have a couple of groups going at the same time? Or
so right now we've just published the fall, the beginning of the year groups, and we have about eight that are going to be launching, because I have about 10 assistants.
That's great.
So we're really getting out there, and we'll see what the new year brings.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. That's brilliant. And thank you so much for coming on and being with me again and sharing your knowledge and letting people know about this important work that you're doing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely to share.
I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with Paula. It was such an interesting discussion. I am excited to share that I will be experiencing one of Paula's The Healing Power of Sound, Cultivating Body, Mind, Heart Connection Through Self-Harmonics Group Experiences in early 2024. My plan is to podcast my experience and probably will include another discussion with Paula about my experience in the group. So please check out Paula's work. Her name again is Paula Scatoloni. Her surname is spelled SCATOLONI. Take care, everyone. Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about the Safe and Sound Protocol in Australia and New Zealand, please contact Integrated Listening Australia. The website is integratedlistening.com.au. And for the rest of the world, please contact Unite Integrated Listening at integratedlistening.com.